At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. It's time for this week's One Last Thing with co-host Slava Cooperstein. Slava, how you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Had to find the unmute button. All things considered, how about yourself?
You know, it could be better right now. We got a lot of things going on in life and trying to make time for football frustration of the Orioles, obviously, is a big deal. But let's stick with the Ravens and our reasons for that. Our episode today, I think, is appropriate given the Twitterverse of what folks have been talking about. Everybody is pushing the panic button. Everybody is willing to basically toss away this whole season. At this point, is saying it can't be fixed. There's an enormous amount of blame going directly to Harbaugh on this. Maybe some of it deserved, and we'll talk about that. But I think we need to kind of reassess, and we kind of pride ourselves as being the NPR of the Ravens podcast space. And so when you come to listen here, we're hoping you want to hear a really balanced assessment of things. You want to hear the bad things when the team's doing well. You want to hear the good things when the team's doing poorly. And we'll give you each side of that in this episode. So Slava and I each have a reason why it's appropriate to hit the panic button right now. And then we're going to talk about some other reasons why it's not appropriate at all to hit the panic button at this point. But Slava, we're going to start with the bad news. How about we start with your reason to hit the panic button?
Sure thing, Ken. And if I knew that we were the NPR, I would have trained myself to have a little bit more vocal fry.
You sound great, man. You're a lawyer, and obviously that's a trial voice you have, I know.
Thanks, Ken. I appreciate that. Starting with reasons to panic, I would say one of the most glaring ones is in-game coaching. So before we get to the coordinators, I think it's pretty easy and pretty quick to just talk about what we're talking about as this relates to John Harbaugh. I think the most glaring thing with Harbaugh is that he has made some really perplexing game management decisions, clock management decisions, ill-conceived challenges. I can even buy that, one of those challenges at least was a matter of, we're going to take a timeout anyways because we need to get, we need to get our guys set and we just need a timeout. So might as well challenge something that's challengeable. I doubt that applies to both challenges. And of course, you're going to see more challenges this year because the coaches are not, or the teams are not penalized for making those challenges.
Not as much. They have to miss both of their first two in terms of being out of challenges if they get either of their first two right. So it used to be a lot of the first challenge was a really high leverage challenge before. Now it's not the case anymore. Teams will take more chances of that. Yeah, very valid point. Why don't you talk about the coordinators and then I'll have some chime in comments, I'm sure.
Sure. Just one last thing on the timeouts. I mean, I think in both games, where the Ravens were marching down the field, towards the end of the game, it really limited what they could do both games, not having that last challenge. So as far as the coordinators go, I think we're dealing with two different issues. I think that starting with Zach Orr, I think Zach Orr is a new coordinator. This is sort of very reminiscent of, McDaniel's first year as defensive coordinator, and just some of the growing pains that come with that. So far, the looks have been very vanilla. I think the biggest gripe for me is just when the opposing offense has found an easy button and they just keep mashing it. They're like, oh, I can you know, toss over the middle to Davante Adams or Rashee Rice or whoever. And they've been able to just completely spam that with no issue whatsoever. And you have to adjust in game. You have to adjust in the drive.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And you're right to bring up McDonald, because in his second game, and this was just Orr's second game, the Ravens had a fallen apart disaster on defense to lose a big lead against Miami. They looked terrible. Hamilton was in the wrong place the entire time. I mean, it was the worst game of his career at that point. But anyway, I would agree. And the problem is really the speed of response. And in any coordinator should get it fixed at halftime. Okay. And they did see a lot of pick and rub routes that Kansas City was running. There were potential alternatives to try and slow that down, whether you drop an outside linebacker, you jam guys coming out of the bunch, you play more physical with them. There's ways to disrupt the timing of that. They would have had to give something else up, but it would have taken away an easy choice from Mahomes. And I think that was part of what it was doing. In the second game, I think it was a matter of, in terms of taking Adams and Bowers away, they needed to throw some fear into Minshew by bringing the safety down to do things. And I've heard really good suppositions of why the Ravens didn't want to make these changes, but they were necessary in both cases. Those two guys were the entire Raiders offense in week two. And in week one, it was a huge portion of what went right for Kansas City's offense in those things. And you can't wait two drives, three drives, five drives to make those changes. In both of those two games, they didn't make them at all. You know, they allowed those pick and rub concepts to continue right to the end of the game. Same thing with Adams and Bowers.
And the other thing that I would say that I know many people have said this week, and I think Jordan mentioned this during your defensive podcast, is that we're not really doing good, and not a good job. We're just not disguising who's rushing. We're not disguising what the coverages look like. You know, most of the time with McDonald, you know, the coverage was looking like a too high shell. And a lot of times, you know, you had that split safety look right, but then he would, you know, rotate into something else or some other version of that. Like Jordan said, so far it's been what you see is what you get. And you're just not making the offense have to work very hard in terms of reading the defense when you do that.
Completely agree. I don't think anything more needs to be said on that. It's something that if you're really selling out in terms of simplicity, in terms of making sure you have the people in the right place, you gain a little bit more of that by not rotating your coverages. But if that's a weakness of your players back there, if Eddie Jackson can't handle that, if Kyle Hamilton can't handle that, but if Eddie Jackson can't handle that, you find someone else for that job. It's not like Eddie Jackson is so great that he should be playing ahead of Ardarius Washington necessarily. And if this is something he can't do and Ardarius can, then, you know, I say change horses.
Yeah. I'm not ascribing this philosophy to Zach Orr. I think this is just being a new coordinator, but if they were to stick with this, then that's sort of just the same as saying, I expect my players to execute what I do. And that really, you know, that reminds me of Cam Cameron saying, you know, I expect this and I want you to do this, rather than making the player's job easier, rather than setting them up for success.
Yeah, it's too bad too, because we thought Orr would be better at adjusting than this, you know, coming directly from under the tutelage of McDonald, but it hasn't worked out so far that way. And it's too early to be chopping heads, and the Ravens wouldn't make a change till the end of the season, I'm pretty sure anyway. But it's not too early to be saying these data points aren't good right now, and the Ravens are kind of running out of time to make changes and get things corrected.
Agreed. And then finally, you know, with regard to Todd Monken, just, you know, very, very vanilla offensively, hasn't the number of times, I mean, I don't know, it seemed like it was happening over and over again that, like, you know, we're second and 13 and we're running, you know, and it just wasn't working. They were keying in on the run again and again and again, and said, okay, maybe we need to try something different, you know, and he really just doesn't appear to be making the adjustments he needs to be making.
I'm most frustrated in terms of Monken, in terms of not really leaning on the Lamar Henry mesh point and really taking advantage of that with a lot more play action. There was some stories coming out of camp today or out of practice today that play action may be a bigger focus. You know, this may be now they don't get to watch much of practice. The media does not get to watch much of practice. So I mean, 30 minutes at the beginning, basically you get to fill out your injury chart. And that's about it. But yeah, that would be the biggest concern I have. But it's also in kind of way, it's an opportunity. Yeah, it's a negative that they've lost two football games and they look this way, but it's also an opportunity that, hey, they haven't done that and they still perform well enough to win the Raiders game offensively. They lost that on, they lost it on penalties, very, very simply, and special teams. They didn't lose it on either offense or defense, which is really unusual that you win both sides of the ball that way. And you lose the game anyway, but they did enough to win both offensively and defensively. And I think it's an opportunity that they could fold in more play action.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, he's certainly done enough to earn the benefit of the doubt and, you know, we'll see how things are moving forward, but I wouldn't say that anybody would be crazy to be displaced with the state of the coaching so far.
Fair enough. All right, I'm going to talk through the offensive line, which is the other obvious panic button item. And it's the going into the season, it is the legitimate weakness for this team. It is the legitimate unknown, the legitimate area of concern over depth. There's just, it's a maelstrom of trouble here. Stanley played very well in this game. He's now on the injury report. He was down on the field a couple of times during the game that I noticed where he actually was pancaked on the play, went to the ground on the play and was holding what appeared to be his left ankle. I may be wrong about that. Might've been his right, but anyway, doesn't matter. I don't want to see him holding either ankle after what's happened to him the last few years. And he's reported as a DNP to the ankle today ago. Harbaugh seems to think it's not a big deal. Anyway, he's played great when he's been in there. The mobility is back. That at least is positive. Linderbaum has played okay. Now, he played pretty well in the first game, got a holding penalty that was kind of a ticky-tack call. No, what certainly is not the worst penalty called on the offensive line this year. Those have all basically gone to Ronnie Stanley. But that it was one of the worst ones. And if you didn't think that was a reasonable penalty, he would have scored very well in that game. This last game, he showed more evidence of being beaten up by bigger guys. And that's a problem, again, that Christian Wilkins is in there pushing him around. Doing things that honestly we saw a lot of from Linderbaum in his rookie year. He still got a B minus as I scored it. To me, a B minus is not adequate for Linderbaum in terms of what the Ravens need out of him at this point. He's a Pro Bowl caliber player that the Ravens need to play at a Pro Bowl level. So, you know, I'm looking for a B plus every game probably from him instead of, or on average, rather than a B minus. Occasional B minus is fine. This was a tough matchup for him. I can excuse it from that perspective, but I'd like to go through scoring for him and not have to write a supplemental paragraph at the end of his little section of play, which talks about why his grade would have been higher if A or B. I don't want to have to do that. I want to have a game where he has an actual clean game. He's not flagged and there's not some snap problem that he has, which he's generally been very good at, but there's not reasons why some opponent type is very difficult for him. He's got to stand on his own feet and really score well is one of the things. I'll give you a chance there before I talk about the players who are the real problem.
Yeah. Right. Ronnie has exceeded all expectations that anyone could reasonably have, having seen what he's looked like the past couple of years. He looks like, it's rewind the clock back to 2020. I mean, looks phenomenal. Nothing more to be said there. Other than that's the feel-good story of the year so far. Linderbaum, I think he's probably looks like he's still maybe getting back into it, having missed some time. And also, I don't think it should be understated the magnitude of how much he's going to be leaned on for the guards on his left and the right. And I think a lot of grace ought to be given to him, particularly this early in the season with that task.
Great point. Yeah, I completely agree on that. It's a great point. Well, let's talk about the three guys who really are the problem. Now, Voorhees took a step forward from an awful preseason, played very well, I thought, against Kansas City at a level that I'd be perfectly happy if he played that way for the whole year, particularly in his first of four seasons, effectively his rookie year. He looks technically solid, but he took a step back in his second game. Wasn't nearly as good. Had some problems with pass blocking in particular. Your pass blocking is always going to be more important than your run blocking. So the fact that he's technically good in a lot of run back blocking elements hasn't really been great on pulls so far, but he's been good in a number of run blocking elements. It's just not enough in and of itself. So he's got to hold up better to what's going on. Going over to Fa'alele, much bigger issue here. He's looked, and this is I underscore this word, he has looked consistently awful. He looks like an oaf playing out of position. He looks like a monolithic right tackle trying to play guard. I mean, you know, an elephant trying to do ballet. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of things about it that he just, you wouldn't typically have this guy in your roster still as anything but a developmental option. He's in year three, and so many things are really impacting the game directly. His lumbering nature makes him too slow on pulls, too slow on stunt and blitz pickups. Some of that, by the way, is processing too, which is really bad. I mean, to the degree he's slow as a player, the processing can be fixed. The slowness of a player is less likely to be fixed, but he's too slow to make blocks in level two. And he's consistently there. May also have something to do with processing, but it's not good. One of the big things that I've heard said is that he's been potentially impeding zone runs so far. I don't know how much I believe that, but I will say that he's not a guy who uses his arms well, and he is a guy that might have trouble matching the pace of the players around him. Not because you don't zone block particularly fast, so it's not something that even a slow player can't keep up with. But he's got to keep up with it. He's got to process his way through it. And he's got to do the other things, and that may be a legitimate complaint. And of course, everybody knows I'm frustrated as hell with him for not using his arms well. So all those results, the results weren't terrible against the Chiefs, but they were much worse against the Raiders. He had a failing grade, about 5 points short of passing. So, by the way, that's not in the completely hopeless area. That's in the it happens once a season, even to a pretty decent lineman area. It also is in the way far away from the O'Neal Cousins area or the James Hurst at his worst area, where you're just getting beaten every single. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Hey, y'all, it's Kelly Clarkson here to talk Wayfair. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Taxes was taxing. Now taxes is relaxing when you file for free.
I can file for free? TurboTax Free Edition. Roughly 37% of filers qualify. Simple form 1040 returns only. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free. I can file for free.
Now this is taxes. File for free with TurboTax Free Edition and get your maximum refund. No schedules except for earned income tax credit, child tax credit, and student loan interest. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free.
single play like a drum. That's not exactly his problem. He's a difficult guy to move. You know, when he does lock up on some reps, when he has double team helps, he's generally a pretty good opportunity to get it done, but he's just incredibly slow and it actually affects the game in a very meaningful way.
Yeah, it's to me, this is Bryant McKinney all over again.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating. I think Harbaugh's ego is in the way of this because I don't score every offensive line snap like you do. I can just tell you what I've seen when we've seen Ben Cleveland come in and play, and Ben Cleveland has done pretty well when he's played. I mean, it's understandable that Zeitler was ahead of him in the only year in Zeitler's career where he got a Pro Bowl. Totally understand. But, you know, Harbaugh has many times let his personal dislike of a player get in the way of putting the best 53 on the field. Okay, so it's not like I'm reading, you know, tea leaves here that are indiscernible. He's made it pretty clear that Ben Cleveland pisses him off, and he's made it clear through the media. He's made it clear through, you know, these other reports that have come out that they really like how Fa'alele practices. It's great that Daniel Fa'alele takes the job seriously and that he really wants to, you know, execute well. The problem is he's not executing well, and it's a problem. I mean, you saw Lamar just get, you know, just torpedoed into the ground by
scary hit.
Yeah.
Crosby.
And actually when I saw it live, I kind of thought that I'll give Crosby credit. He did not land his body weight on Lamar. He actually went off to the side. So credit to him on that. But, this decision to keep Ben Cleveland down could end up getting somebody injured. And by the way, it's affecting how much time Linderbaum has to pay attention to what's going on his right. If he has Ben Cleveland on his right, he can devote more attention to helping Voorhees. And Ben Cleveland isn't going to be this massive liability next to Rosengarten. And if he is, then let us see that, because right now what we're seeing out of Fa'alele is not acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's just part of it. Let us see it. I think Cleveland has clearly in 3 years, as much as, you know, failing the endurance test. Conditioning test. Yeah, failing the conditioning test after his wedding and showing up fat and having the Ravens, you know, publicize that by putting his roster weight in and his actual weight instead of fudging it a little bit like they do for a lot of players. May or may not love the game of football. When he really comes down to it, he may not be a guy who just says, there's nothing I want to do rather than be out here and strap on the pads and be here with guys and do the things I want to do. And if that's the case, you know, then I have an understanding about why that's true. And Harbaugh does have a long history, though. He held Bryant McKinney out for an entire season before putting him in for the postseason when it had to be done, when it really, really had to be done, when Orr was playing terrible at left tackle, when Osemele could have played much better at left guard, and they had Ramon Harwood or somebody had been playing left guard for a lot of the year, and they really needed to get him out of there. They finally fixed it in time for the playoffs. I would hate to think this is a year where they don't even make the playoffs because they don't make the change. But I do think, I honestly believe that they'll probably correct that one. Let me move on here because I'm kind of short on time tonight. I want to keep getting going here. But the right tackle platoon, very bad so far. McCary has been faced with the sort of opponents that give him a lot of trouble. Longer guys who really know how to use that length well, hit you with that tree trunk in the middle of your chest and creams of Crosby and Jones. And the other teams are leaning on it. They're seeing it. It's out there on tape. It's going to be a big disadvantage for him the rest of the year. So that's hurt him. Rosengarten played poorly in the first game, including that the sack and forced fumble of his own on that first play of the game. But then has been pretty good actually since that particular snap. And he went 15 for 17 in the last game. So that was solid. I think that probably we see an increased percentage of Rosengarten this week. I don't think we'll see 100%, but I think we might flip the script and have it be 2/3 Rosengarten, 1/3 McCary.
Yeah, I can't tell you. You know, I don't understand at all why you would have put McCarry back in the game. Rosengarten was a much better matchup. I mean, what he's known for is having really good feet, right?
Yep.
And his get off on the ball is very, very quick. And that's exactly the type of player that you need to stymie Max Crosby. And that's exactly what he did. So, you know, when they put him in, I was very happy. And then all of a sudden we're putting McCarry in again. I don't understand it. Again, you know, set aside your coaching ego. You know, like I have these really good reasons why I think this is going to work. You know, in the law, they call it killing your darlings, right? Like, you know, you think you have this really great turn of phrase for opening. You need to cut it out because other people don't know what the hell you're talking about. So, you know, kill your darlings, coaches, and do what's working. And I think Rosengarten has earned more snaps.
It is just a very slightly different problem at right tackle, because there it's preference for veteran over rookie. And, you know, he's no doubt remembering all the times that McCarry's bailed out the team in the past by being an adequate tackle replacement. And, you know, it's worth a lot of money to have that guy on your roster. Yeah. And I want to keep him in reserve. I want him to be the sixth man, actually be the sixth man who's sitting on the bench waiting for his opportunity, as opposed to a guy who's playing rotational snaps over a guy. We really need to figure out who he is for 2025, because he'll be central to any decision to maybe re-sign Ronnie, to look elsewhere, determine if you need to draft a left tackle or a right tackle, where you need to do moving up and trading. What I mean, they have so much they have to learn from Rosengarten's play.
And final thing on Rosengarten that I would say is that Rosengarten being a rookie isn't going to be as consequential if you have Ben Cleveland next to him, right? Because Ben Cleveland has that game experience, right? It's not Fa'alele and Rosengarten, right? So I think that is the combination they fear. So if that's the issue and you're able to fix right guard, or at least improve it somewhat so that you're getting more consistency, then having Rosengarten out there shouldn't be as big an issue.
Great point. And inside to outside processing for Cleveland was one of the things I really liked about him in college. So that would be he played right guard. So he's back to exactly where he's in the same hunting stand he's been at right guard the whole his whole college career, knowing how to process from left to right. So I'd be in favor of that. Let's spend some time though talking about reasons why it's not time to panic, because we just got very loud, very animated in this discussion. And yet I think both of us agree this is a team that still has a lot going for it.
Yeah, so I'll kick it off with health. The last few years, we've just been completely marred with injuries, and this year we are doing pretty well. You know, we've gotten very lucky on this front, I think, a couple times. Van Noy, you know, has gone from how many weeks is he going to miss with this fractured orbital to having a pretty dominant game last week. It looks like he's not going to miss any time whatsoever. Stanley looks phenomenal. We already covered that. Ojabo is looking good. He's not showing any signs of any kind of injury. Andrews, I think, looked better this past week than he did the week before. Incidentally, I think that Steve Bisciotti should hire a limousine service for the entire 53-player roster.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, they need to not be driving. You know, I'm not going to ascribe blame to anybody. I don't know what the particulars were of the accidents. But, yeah, I think 2 to 3 car accidents, I think I'm about done on that. So health is looking really good. I mean, I will say we got the injury report today, like you mentioned, Ronnie Stanley, but with the ankle. But Harbaugh says that's not going to be a big deal. And not just it's not a big deal, but he will be playing Sunday is what he said, which is a little bit stronger than like not a big deal. Adisa Isaac had a full practice, I think, for the first time since he either aggravated or re-aggravated his hamstring. And, you know, that's a really good thing to hear on a Wednesday, right? As opposed to, you know, Friday. And so I think that we're doing pretty well for non-car related injuries.
Right. Well, the Wiggins injury is still serious. And you know, the fact that he's not back, it's a concussion. You really don't know. The second one that is really bothering me is Kyle Hamilton, because Kyle Hamilton didn't look entirely right this last week. And I need to, didn't have a terrible game as a tackler. It looked okay, but honestly, he doesn't look like the dominant Kyle Hamilton playmaking of old. And that is really bothering me. So I hope that that's true. Adisa Isaac, getting him back would really take a lot of burden off of the outside linebacker group in terms of snap count. So that would be a nice addition, to be sure. So I'm excited with all that. I'll give you my first reason not to panic is that the Ravens have not yet taken advantage of the Lamar Henry mesh point. They haven't run a bunch of read option plays. I think they were kind of afraid to do it with Max Crosby in there because they thought Crosby is just going to be told to go after the quarterback on every single play, which is perfectly legal. So you can't you don't want to build your offense around freezing that player or trying to get him to guess wrong when he doesn't really care that much. If he guesses wrong, he's just going to guess Lamar every time. So that would be a reason. But I think what we also haven't seen is a lot of play action off of that. And it may be that they need to move back to more pistol and run their play action out of shotgun. That's the way the team did it in 2019. It was extraordinarily successful. And I think it would be again, if they did that, which means Lamar would has to hand off left or right and be the outside run threat because the player coming out of pistol becomes the middle run threat. He then has to go to the sideline. It has the added benefit, as it did in 2019, of Lamar being less often hit and more often just simply running out of bounds.
I completely agreed. I think you summed that up perfectly. I think it's an element of the game that we all envisioned when Derrick Henry was signed, and one that we can all look forward to. So I'll go to my final reason for optimism, and that is the defensive line and edge positions have been extremely stout. We all know about the phenomenal interior players that we have who are both good on pass rush and against the run in Pierce, in Matabike, in Travis Jones, but everybody is sort of headed in the direction that you would have hoped, right? Travis Jones is playing like a man possessed. Matabike is maintaining a really high level. Ojabo is finally coming on. Van Noy hasn't fallen off. Everybody and Owe is finally delivering in the ways that we were all hoping and expecting them to. So everybody's delivering right now, and it's pretty phenomenal.
So a combination of both health and effectiveness has been remarkable there. It's sad that these performances have kind of been wasted. I think everybody's really happy with the not only the number of sacks, but the percentage of finishes is way up this year in terms of the percentage of pressures that are getting finished as sacks, much higher than last year. If I look at Matabike, he's generating a lot of the first pressures this year. He's been a guy who's been in the backfield last year. He was much more of a cleanup player, kind of a more of a vertical pyramid. He didn't have a terrible set of pressures. I know I've said this a lot on the show, but it's he had fewer pressures than you would hope for him to have, given that he had 13 sacks. And so that's where you go for that.
And just one last thing I would add to that the Ravens did sign Chris Wormley to their practice squad. So really makes it seem like they're trying to be a little bit more careful about the number of snaps they have for rotation this season and a plan in case somebody does miss some time, because obviously health is paramount.
Yeah, they only missed one game, and it was a healthy scratch game for Braddock Washington all of 2023. So I think it makes complete sense that they not have the kind of drop-off that they had in all apparentness between the fifth and the sixth practice squad. The five guys they have on the roster and the sixth guy on the practice squad was just a long way down. But anyway, very happy with the line, as you mentioned so far. I'll give you one more. I think that a lot of this – there have been two AFC games, which is always bad in terms of playing for the wild card. But the Ravens' big chance for a long playoff run is to win the AFC North. They remain, at this point, the betting favorite to win the AFC North despite their 0-2 start. The number two team is the Bengals with their 0-2 start. The number three team is the Browns with their 1-1 start. Is the Steelers with their 1-1 start. Is 2-0 start. And then the Browns are last. They're like 5.5-1 to win the division still. But gambling markets are typically very efficient about these things. And the fact that the Ravens have no AFC games played to date, they won't face their first until the Bengals in Week 5, gives them a chance to get over some of their problems, install more of a play-action offense, or to get more aggressive about making changes as they go along, and for this offensive line to just gel a little bit, or make changes and run with that, so you have your best players out there for the Bengals. I think is a very good place to be for an 0-2 team.
And just putting some things into perspective, you know, I think it was always a long shot to beat the Chiefs. Not that it was even like highly unlikely, but, you know, a betting man would probably bet on the Chiefs, right, at home, you know, against Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. That's a tough start to a season. The Raiders game, of course, hurts because it's an AFC opponent at home that you probably should have beaten. But, you know, the Ravens have been here before. They lost two very frustrating games very early on last season and finished with the number one seed, right? That doesn't mean that that's going to happen this year, but all these statistics about being 0-2 and all of these things, statistics do not necessarily matter to the individual, particularly when you place it in the context of the games left to play. Ravens have the majority of their opportunity ahead of them.
All right. Always outstanding talking football with you, Slava. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
I'm on Twitter at Slava Cooperstein. That's SlavaCoopersTein.
Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I'd like to hear your ideas. I'd like to hear your thoughts. I'd like to hear your questions for the next one last thing, if you have them, for Slava and me. Slava, a very contemplative, cerebral man, and it gives us a lot in terms of his thought about the game. Please think about what might be a good question for this show. We don't always talk about the same things that are going on, so I know that's a kind of a hard moving target, but please use hashtag film study mailbag if you want to do that. For Slava Cooperstein, this is Ken McCusick saying good night, and we'll talk to you next week on One Last Thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.